Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Sorry I missed the first two talks. I was over in the other building giving a talk, too. I was asked to talk a little bit about soil health, particularly the soil biology, and I put this title here, Where Art Thou? We'll get started here. I'll bring you back a little bit in past history, 50 BC. Columella, this is a classic article, and it was really interesting because he developed the criteria for identifying soil quality. So, Doug, we've been working on it for a few years, but not as long as I realized when I found this article. So he had six descriptors, and I won't have time to go through all these. Actually, in my class, I talk about what they indicate. But I guess I'll ask the audience, which one, or any of them, relate to soil biology? Are as a direct product of biology. Smell. Okay? Geosmin, that earthy odor that's produced by actinomycetes. Okay? So all those, taste is really pH. Color is organic matter. So I can go through this list, but we won't have time. But smell is only one. And unfortunately, at that time in 50 BC, we really didn't have the tools necessary to assess the biology of the soils as these guys are trying to figure out there. So, all right. So there's a few of us in the room that have been around for a while. And we had John Duran and Doug and Diane, and I'm probably missing some people, that had all these debates on defining soil quality and soil health, and we've kind of used these terms interchangeably in that. But basically, soil quality is defined, at least by one definition, is the functional capacity of soil to meet the human needs by supporting optimal biological activity and diversity for economic production of crops and livestock and other environmental benefits. Okay, soil health is continued capacity of a soil as a vital living system, whereby plant and animal growth, but not microbes, and environmental quality is sustained. All right? So really there's key words here, optimum biological activity, vital living systems. All right, and out of that effort, I forgot the regional project that we were on, Anyway, 59. We had some efforts to look at how do you measure soil quality or soil health, and I'll get into that. But what do we want out of soil health? Okay, there's a couple things, and Doug, I borrowed this from your work. You probably should give him this talk as well. But there's a couple things here. There's some differences in the quality of the soil, the inherent properties of the soil. And as you see here, that there's changes here, that this soil is less has less annual change versus this soil here, but it's fairly stable. So there's lots of terms, resilience, resistance, the recovery. And as shown here, the question really in soil quality, and as Steve was mentioning, how is that soil changing? Is it sustaining itself? Is it aggrading? If it's coming from a degraded state, we want to be aggrading it and hopefully avoiding the degrading concept. But so how do you monitor it? So it's not just measuring it one time. It's measuring the state over time to really assess some of those things. Okay, as far as soil health assessment, we were looking at some of those vital functions, and I mentioned some of those, but we want to know the biological activity of that soil, the partitioning or regulation of water, the filtering of that soil for organic material. We've used soils to process a lot of our waste material, whether it's septic tanks or dispose of other waste purposely or sometimes not on purpose. And then we want, of course, for food security is to recycle some of the nutrients for plant production and food security, and then protect the habitat. So we're really looking at three major functions, the biological, chemical, and physical. And then what are the proper indicators of that? So I'm going to focus a little bit, the rest of my talk on those biological factors. So again, the three factors are here. Well, back in the 1990s, we were working, and John Duran had his soil quality test kit. I pulled this off the website, the instructions, in 2001. And there's 11 factors there, or measurements there, or actually more than 11, but the way they group them. All right. And the bottom two are the only two measures of biological activity. Bulk density, you're measuring physical characteristics, electrical conductivity, pH, soil nitrate, and some of the physical attributes. But we're really only looking at soil respiration, and earthworm is in that 11-component test kit in there. But if you talk to the producers, they talk about the soil biology is so important. We define the definition of soil quality and soil health is that living system. But there's only two, and I would argue at least one of those is I have some question about respiration. Okay, and I'll illustrate that. Okay. And that might be switching talks next X. I forgot mine. Okay, so this is an illustration. This is N2O production from one of my students, Andrew McGowan. This is N2O, but I could put CO2 on here, but this was handy. So over here in this panel here is N2O emissions, which is a product of biological activity. All right, this is just one year, and I should actually put in multiple years. But I think it's telling just as it is. Okay, so when do I measure, and this could be in CO2, right? So it's going up and down here. Now you could tie it to precipitation events. Here's water field pore space, here's soil temperature. But there's, and a lot of it is tied to rainfall events, and if I put CO2, it would show the same patterns or responses in some cases. But there's lots and lots of things that are going on here. And at least some of the audience, this is nothing new. All right, so it's really this integration. But if I measured respiration, I saw this, when do I measure it? If I measure it today, and I measure it tomorrow, I could get 10 times higher number tomorrow than today. Actually, it's timely. If I measured it, what is today, Monday? So if I measured it yesterday here in town, and I'm measuring it after today, it could be 10 times higher. Why? It rained. Wow. So has the soil health changed? Huh? No. So activity measurements, at least respiration, I have trouble interpreting that. And the question is, high respiration good or bad? Maybe. All right. And I just gave a talk on carbon. You know, high respiration activity could mean I'm losing a lot of carbon. So I don't know how to interpret it. So that's my comment on respiration. So I don't think it's a very good measure for measuring soil health in assessment tool. And really what we want is that interrelationship between microbial activity, and I should put biological, the structural and diversity are important to soil health, but they're not exclusive. They're really tied to the rest of the soil, whether it's the physical and the chemical components, and it's a dynamic relationship. And so when I talk about, Lynn, wherever you went, that I gave this slide 20 minutes ago, but really what we're looking at is the relationship of those key soil properties. And so if there's one thing I had to measure in soil, it would be carbon. And if there's if you give me three things, it'd be some measure of soil structure and some measure of microbial activity, because they're all interrelated and they feed on each other figuratively and realistically. But then those components drive the soil health. And so what are those proper measures here of the biology that we should be measuring for soil health purposes? And so what I want to do is take a little bit of time to talk some of the things, at least what I think we should be focusing on. I don't like CO2 respiration for the reasons that I just mentioned. Not that it's not valuable, it tells you things, but you got to put it in a much more complex environment. All right. So one measure of activity, and I have a grad student that he's presenting a poster later this week, measuring enzyme activity. And I've been kind of on and off about enzyme activity, but I guess I'm on right now. It's more stable. It's a measure of activity, but it's not responsive, day-to-day responsive. So I really think this is probably an indicator of more stable relationships of microbial and plant activity, but pick and choose. So what you see here is some work that he's done in southeast Kansas showing a grassland buffer strip soil, or soil under grassland, and then no-till in the purple, and then the blue is a tilled system and cropping systems down in southeast Kansas. So what you can see here is that, yes, there's differences. The native system or grassland system has this enzyme activity, but we're seeing some differences in the no-till and conventional till. But it's not going to be as dynamic as the CO2, which I think is a good thing, and as a potential indicator. I know the one aspect, the Cornell health test, did include enzyme activity. But we need to have, I guess, argue what are the right kind of enzymes that we need to measure. The other thing is that looking at this interrelationship between the physical, chemical, and biological, that we spent a lot of effort looking at fungal hyphae. And this, what this slide shows is the relationship between the extent of, in this case, arbuscular mycorrhizal hyphae in the soil and the relationship to macroaggregates in the soil. And so, remind me when it's 5 minutes. So you can see, I'm surprised that we got this tight of a relationship. This is in a native prairie soil that we suppressed mycorrhizae, or in some cases we were able to enhance it by some above ground management. But there's this really tight relationship between the mycorrhizae, the hyphae, and aggregates in a native prairie soil. And what we saw was, and after just 5 years of suppressing the mycorrhizal fungi, that we lost carbon in that soil. So that carbon that was associated with inside those macroaggregates, when you suppress the hyphae, you lost aggregate structure and you exposed that carbon, and we had a significant decline in carbon in an undisturbed native prairie soil just by suppressing mycorrhizae. I was just astounded by this, I still am, that it was this tight and that we could lose carbon in that, again, in a native situation. So I guess I'm pushing for the relationship of fungi in that. And some other work that we've done, Paul White looked at no-till. Well, we had a study where we took a disturbed soil, degraded soil, and put it back into no-till and tilled sorghum as well as replanting grasses. And what you see here is phospholipid fatty acid analysis of the microbial community. And what's noticeable here is when there's a change in color, that means a significant difference between those systems. So here, in this case, it's total fungi, not mycorrhizae, but the saprophytic fungi, we see in the less disturbed systems a compositional change in the undisturbed or the less disturbed systems, the prairie grass and no-till. But we also see some compositional changes a little bit in the gram negatives and more so in the gram positive bacteria and certainly in actinomycetes. And so what we're suggesting is that this change in microbial community structure is affecting that physical structure that showed the relationship with aggregates, and is changing the carbon, which in my mind is probably the most important aspect because it relates to everything else. And so that's the biology maybe that we need to look at. So I'm doing plenty of time. Okay, so what are some of the suggestions that we need to look at? I don't think it's some of the more dynamic relationships of microbial activity. I like the enzymes, and I just gave you a teaser on that. Diane, you're...
go for it.
Okay, all right. I didn't know if you were distressed or happy.
No, I absolutely
yeah.
agree.
And I know, I think the heyday or the time for enzymes is made to resurrect. There's some neat tools for doing quick analysis of enzyme activity in mass production ways. That's the other thing. We need to think of soil health assessment tools, biological measures, that are relatively easy and inexpensive to do if we're going to do a soil health assessment for producers and land managers. I guess because of carbon, what's the total quantity of microbial biomass? I still think that's important. We used to do chloroform and fumigation process, but I think now you can do the phospholipid analysis and add up all the phospholipids and be a relative indicator of microbial biomass. And again, that's determining that active portion of that carbon pool that actually was in some of our soil health assessments early on. What was that active carbon pool? And I'm a microbiologist, but what is the role of soil fauna in that soil health? Whether it's being estimating earthworms, there's a lot of earthworm assessment activities. That has a role in that carbon and physical structure as well, and is responsive to management. But I guess on the soil biology side, you're doing all right? Okay. is what's the microbial? And that's where I think we've had the weak link in the past. But I think now we have some better tools. I really think the phospholipid fatty acid analysis, if I was going to promote that, I'm not promoting it, but I think at least all the work that we've done in the last 10 years or so on it, it seems to be sensitive to management. It seems to be sensitive to soil type. It's sensitive to crop residue, crop type, rotation systems. We've worked in it with Brazil to temperate climates to and that. So I really, and you get an idea of some of the diversity. It's not the molecular techniques, but I really like that as a tool that can be done relatively easily and tells you a lot of information. And what we've shown, it relates to carbon content and aggregate the physical aspects as well. I guess I had to put on here the molecular techniques, but I really think that's way, way down the future. It may be too much information, and it's right now it's expensive, time course, and the information you get out of it, a lot of people don't know even how to handle the information that's coming from some of the molecular techniques. So I really don't think that's a tool for soil health assessment nowadays, maybe 20 years from now. But I think for these others, I think are really keys. And so that's soil biology, where are those are my recommendations. And so with that, I guess I can take some questions.
Yeah, two questions, Chuck.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you have any opinion about using the PLFA versus the FAME analysis. I know they use similar things.
Well, they're the same, basically the same thing. You get the same kind of information.
Okay, you don't have a preference.
Yes.
As a researcher, I really like the PLFA analysis. I have a lot of data that really is very interested.
Yeah. Well, I think Ray Ward is doing it in a commercial lab now. And if you're well set up, I can't remember what we've penciled it out. I forget now what the cost is. But, yeah, it's on the higher side you couldn't do pH. I mean, you can't do PLFA that you could do pH or nitrate test. But right now I think of the biological measures that are meaningful, I'm not sure what else you would choose. The enzyme analysis would still be, you know, low to medium expense. But if you want to understand the microbial composition related to the physical and chemical attributes, I guess I don't see any other option at this point. And it's certainly way cheaper than the molecular. Yeah.
So Bill, on the question there about the PFLFAs and the enzymes and things, there's a fair amount of data that has been collected on these. How do you see a mechanism to pull the existing knowledge together on a lot of these biological activities to begin to give us some interpretation tools that could then be transferred more quickly to the farm community? What will it take? Do you see a mechanism to accomplish?
Well, I have a friend of mine, John Hamer, that says we don't need to do any more experiments. We just need to collect all the information and analyze the existing data that we had. I don't agree with him because I'm a researcher. But in one sense, I think that what we need to do is sit down and get in all the filing cabinets and all the floppy disks, which some of you may not know, and get all that information and data mine and look at those relationships. Go back to our NC committee, but look at all the information to generate the interpretive tools. Because I think we probably have 80% of it there that we could do, and so maybe that's something Doug and Diane we can do.
I think the real key, and I was the second part of that, is I would agree 100% with you. Now, how can we entice somebody that wants to fund that kind of an activity?
Wayne? No, I think I'm somewhat kidding, but not. I think we do have a lot of data that we could put together and reanalyze it in new ways. And now with the data information, the big data, I think there's some value of, and then find out where the gaps are and do the more research. But I think we do have information. Yeah, so we use Benamil, which actually, not Benamil. Oh, shoot. We use two, one is Topsin, I forgot what it is, and the other fungicide. But it was particular in the grasslands. It was specific for a root-inhabiting fungi, and it didn't affect the saprophytic fungi. We tested for that, yeah, which was kind of interesting. But we had to keep adding at the soil. I can't think of the name of the compound. Something like that. So we had to do like I think every 2 weeks we had to do a drench in the soil, which we quit the experiment because it got pretty expensive to do and labor intensive. But yeah, but it was amazing that we saw the effects in that because we didn't disturb the soil. It was native prairie. Didn't change the grasses, but we just suppressed the mycorrhizal fungi.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you.